Okay, and here we are back with Harry Cooper, hour number two, talking about the upcoming tour, and I'm trying to figure this out. There are, hold on a second here. Okay, we lost Harry. Are you there, Harry? No, now we lost Harry. Okay, first of all, there's supposed to be another couple dozen pictures, which are not, I'm not understanding what's happening. They're not here. Well, let me try and get this straightened out here. Now, okay. No, that's all the pictures I can see, and we've lost Harry. So there you go. Okay. Now James is saying that's all the pictures he got. Not true. I got everything he got. And I got 10 emails. Okay. Da, 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 da. Nope. All right. Something happened, and I don't know what happened. So we don't have Harry. We don't have pictures. Well, maybe it's a sign of the times. How about that? Let's see. Let me get this here. I pull this over. All right. I don't know what else to do here right now. I'm going to try. I guess James is attempting to. I've sent him all the pictures again, so he's got them twice now. And I think he's trying to put some of them up, but I won't be able to tell you what they mean without Harry. Todd, are you trying to get a hold of Harry there? Let me know by email if you would, please. Now, in the meantime, I had two emails from Patty Doyle that we're going to put up tonight. This is very important. As you know, and I think by now, the CDC has, half a dozen or more jets, small jets that can carry two or three sick people to larger jets and might be able to carry 15, maybe 20, some sitting up, some laying down. These are called BSL-level jets, BSL 1, 2, 3, and 4. BSL-4 is the most stringent type of contamination-concerned configuration in a jet. Anyone with a contagious communicable disease would be transported. These are deadly diseases like Ebola. In a CDC jet that would have a BSL-4 right. Facility. Okay, now I'm going to have that story up later tonight, so you're going to be very unhappy about what it says. They are apparently, we got Harry back, I hear him. They are apparently.
Yeah, I thought I got fired there. The line just went dead. I thought
no,
I was fired.
No. James is really screwed up. He has not posted the pictures. He says he posted everything that you sent him, which is not true. I got 8 or 10 emails worth of pictures. So he says he's going to try to put them up. So we're going to have to just fill until he can put them up. These things happen, and they've happened again. So we'll get them up as soon as we can. What I wanted to say about this...
Am I going to have to sing and dance?
No dancing. We can't see you, but we can hear you. CDC, let me finish this little thing about these CDC planes. Centers for Disease Control, or Death Control. They are continually flying. And Patty tracks them. There's a flight service thing on the internet where you can watch where airplanes go. They file their flight plans.
Yeah.
Now, the CDC doesn't do that with the particular planes we're talking about in every case. Because what these planes are doing is flying to Africa and back over and over again. One of them just went to Japan and then Alaska and then back. And you'd think that they're going maybe to pick up American military personnel who are very sick to bring them back for treatment. These are emergency flights. But what happens is that 90% of them are being made to Africa. And they're going over there in these BSL biosafety level 4 equipped airplanes. And Patty has figured it out that they're bringing back people with Lassa fever or Ebola. Now you'd say to yourself, well, why would they do that? And that is the question. Why would they do that? Why go to Africa and bring these people here for treatment when they can treat them there? Now, that's rule number one. Are they trying to release these people into our society with these communicable diseases? I don't know, but I honestly wouldn't put anything past people and what they call government anymore. So I'll have this story up
one
later
world
tonight.
Government.
New world order, one world government, globalism, it doesn't matter. All right.
Bilderbergers.
Yeah. So James, I just sent all the pictures again to him, and he says, you just send a lot of emails. I will try to make photo pages and link them. Well, there's a rocket scientist for you. Yeah, I know.
I sent them early this morning.
I got them all, too.
Incidentally, stepping back to Bilderbergers, as you know, in our KTV magazine, 2 years ago, maybe three, we ran a story about the Bilderbergers. One of our members, who was kind of deep cover in one of our agencies, sent us photos of their New York offers, sent us photos of the top people, and quite a story about it, which we ran. I'm sure you read it.
Yep.
And gotten on it, she disappeared about 2 months later. We haven't found her since. She's probably been transferred to something else, I guess.
Huh. All right, to you. Okay. All right, so anyway, there's been a major screw-up, and we'll get through it. Hopefully we'll get some of the pictures up there. I'll tell you what the pictures look like when he puts them up. Let me write him one more note here. Just put them up one page at a time. Put them up. One. This is how big time radio works now. One page at a time.
And to think I shaved and put on a good suit just to be on.
Yeah, you look.
There
I was going
to
tell you how snappy you look. I don't want your ego to puff up again. All right. Now,
yeah.
Oh, have you been able to take your Corvette out, by the way?
I had it out yesterday, and boy, I'll tell you. Well, we're into the rainy season here, so I never take it out when it's raining for many reasons. But it was a beautiful day yesterday, so my wife and I went out to breakfast. We took separate cars. She she doesn't like the white knuckle ride in the Corvette. So we got done, and she went home, and I went the long way and down these deserted highways in backwoods Florida. And, you know, get to blow out the carburetor. And I came up by the little road leading into our place, and there was just six or seven squad cars around. They had just finished a major drug bust, and they had hauled off the perpetrators, and there were about six or seven squad cars. I guess the deputies were all just getting their reports done.
Uh-huh.
So I pulled up. Everybody was going by. Nobody would stop, naturally. So I pulled up. I got out. I said, hi, I'm from the press. And the one deputy says, the what? I said, the press. I belong to the International Press Club, the Chicago Press Club, and I write for the local newspaper here.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, okay. I said, so can you tell me what's going on here? Oh, nothing. We're just resting, relaxing. I said, oh, okay. I kept asking them, and they kept going around in circles. So I said, well, would you mind if I took a photo of the scene? And the one deputy says, well, we'd rather you didn't. So I said, okay, if you don't want me to, then I won't. And I said, you guys are just here looking for Jimmy Hoffa's body, aren't you? And the one cop says, who's that?
Jimmy who? At first they didn't know what the word press meant. Then they didn't know Jimmy Hoffa. All right, you know you're in trouble when
that happens. Come on. I says, come on, you got to know who Jimmy Hoffa was. He says, oh, I'm only 24 years old. Why would I know? I said, look, I'm 78. I know who George Washington was.
Perfect comeback.
I know who George Washington. Yeah, well, then
if you'd ask him about George Washington, ask him to give you a few sentences, he probably couldn't do it.
So, we got good cops in our area, and they're decent, professional people, and a few times I've had to chat with them on the side of the road, it was always because I had got caught pushing the button with the Corvette, and they were always really decent. Last guy chewed me out for about 5 minutes, and then gave me my license back and said, "Be careful, Mr. Cooper. This is a very fast car." And, of course, I could have gone on, but I said, "Thank you very much, officer." I didn't bother to tell him that I was used to doing 190 miles an hour on Sunday afternoons on the super speedways, because then he probably would have rethought his idea of letting me go.
Right, right.
But I've had it out. It just, I really love it.
What year is it again?
Unwinds. 81.
Now that's
and we.
That's a classic. That's a classic.
Yeah. And we redid it torch red. And
nothing like drawing attention to yourself. I get it.
I know. A red Corvette, you know, cops have a special radar that only sees red sports cars.
I believe it.
I found an artist who's going to do a design on my hood, a huge, big bald eagle in flight clutching an American flag in its talons. That's going on my hood.
Wow. Well, I wonder how that'll react with the mind of a law enforcement officer.
Well, we live in a pretty right-wing, redneck area, so we fit right in. You know, anybody who doesn't like the United States of America.
Redneck, red Corvette, it kind of goes together. That's all right.
Yeah, that's right. So, anyhow, let me update you a little bit on South America. You know, I got kicked out of Brazil 2-3 months ago because I had a flawed visa. So, a couple weeks ago, they make it so hard. Brazil does. Brazil and the United States have been fighting with each other in visas for quite some time. So
what's the deal? Well, who wins? Why? They lose. They lose tourism. They lose dollars. Stupid. You should want the Yankees down there. Yeah.
Yeah, you'd think so. But anyhow, you have 13 pages of instructions. Then you have to fill out the form online. You have to attach your photograph online. You have to send it in online. Then you have to show up at the consulate with everything you sent online, and now you have to give it to them in the paper form. And like I think I told you, when I went down there, it's about 400 miles, and I was flying. And, of course, I get into Miami. I got lost. I finally got to the consulate. I'm sitting and waiting, and all of a sudden I realize my passport is on my desk back home. So I drive 400 miles back home that Monday, and the next day, Tuesday, drive 400 miles
you
back.
You didn't. That, see, now you, I, yeah. Okay, I got to be honest.
Stupidity.
Harry told me this, but you just rhetorically say that's not possible. What did you do during the trip? Pound yourself on the jaw with your right hand? What did you do?
Well, after I found out, after I realized, I just felt like such a jerk. I told the security guy, he was really a nice guy. I said, "Hey, I got to leave," because I told him what happened. He said, "Oh, that's too bad." 400 miles back home, got home in time to take a hot shower, go to bed, get up the next morning, fly 400 miles back down on Tuesday, got lost again in traffic. And in Miami, and got there.
You didn't take the Corvette.
No. Geez, 12 miles to the gallon, no. So I got down there, and I parked in the parking lot right behind a brand-new Ferrari. So I figure I'm
red,
okay.
Red Ferrari?
No, for some reason it was black. Who buys a Ferrari that ain't red? But this guy had a black Ferrari, and went back to the consulate, and the security guy remembered me, said hi, and he gave me a nice number to get up to the window. My turn came. I got up there. This gorgeous Brazilian lady, super pleasant, polite, just asked me a couple of questions. Bang, boom, took my papers, took my photograph, took my $160. Said, "Okay, you'll get your 10-year visa in 14 days. So I get all the way back home, and I'm waiting. 2 days ago, it shows up. 10-year visa for Brazil. So I'm going back down one month from right now. I'll be in Buenos Aires.
Okay, so you got a 10-year visa from Brazil.
That's correct.
They
so
gave it to you.
The first week in, yep. No, wow. They gave it to me after I gave them a bunch of money, $160. But anyhow, I'm starting out in Buenos Aires because there are people there I need to talk to who have a piece of the puzzle. I'm also trying to get confirmation from Diego Horton that I can come visit him. You know, his father and his uncle were the two Horton brothers that designed the flying wing.
Now this is the son of one of the Horton brothers, and if you don't know
right.
about the Horton brothers, you really need to look at it on the internet. Do a search for the Horton Horton brothers. Horton brothers. Look for designs. I'm doing four things at once here. Look for designs, and you're going to see predecessors of all American advanced bombers, fighters. They're all there. This is our program is essentially a German. The baseline of it, the rock bottom, the foundations were all Germany, World War II. Our aircraft.
And it was the two Horton brothers who designed the jet-powered flying wing bomber that was actually a stealth bomber. And when I met his grandson, he showed me all the plans and the blueprints for the Horton, was it HO-529 or whatever.
229.
Okay. Then he showed me letters of appreciation from the United States Air Force for him helping design our B-2 bomber and our F-117 Nighthawk stealth fighter.
Oh,
so,
my.
I want to get up to visit Diego because his father was Reimer Horton, one
uh-huh.
of the two brothers.
Uh-huh.
Then after my week in Argentina, I'm going into Brazil to meet some friends who are also incredibly sharp researchers on not only on Hitler down there, but on something else that I'm not free to divulge just yet.
Right.
And then we're going into Paraguay, and there's some really interesting things we're looking at in Paraguay. Some of them I've told you about in confidence, I hope, by the time we do our next show.
Of course.
We'll be able to talk about them. And then after those 2 weeks are up, then I come back to relax in Argentina. I'm going to spend 3 days with our friend Lawrence DeMello on
mm-hmm.
her ranch.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. So, and we should have some interesting stuff to talk about.
Well, I remember pictures of the ranch and service you got there. She's got that wonderful cook. Well, good. That's a nice way to wind it up. Oh, let me suggest.
Right. She's such a nice lady.
Yeah, yeah. Yes, I've heard nothing but
brilliant
good things.
When it comes,
yeah.
Yeah, brilliant when it comes to Martin Bormann.
Let me ask our listeners also, just do a simple search, H-O for Horton, 229. If you don't know these pictures, you've got to go look at it. H-O-229, it was actually flown, but then Germany ran out of time at the end of the war. The plane, when you see it, you won't believe it. A twin jet, bat wing, stealth, air superiority fighter. And you'll say, wait a minute, that looks like some of our stuff. And you got it. And the Germans did it all.
And
now, go ahead.
The neat thing, too, we've got a photo of a Horton jet-powered flying wing bomber flying over the rainforest of Brazil.
Well, they kept building after the war ended down there, no doubt.
Right. Well, the Horton brothers went down there, and they designed flying wings for the Argentine Air Force. There was another one. I've got a video of some of the planes that were designed.
Mm-hmm.
And this was a cargo plane, a flying wing cargo plane. It looked like a Winnebago glued underneath a gigantic boomerang. Just an ugly son of a gun, but it flew.
Hmm. What was the, this is for our listeners, what was the fastest piston engine fighter of World War II? Now, think about it. It's, people are thinking P-38, 229, doesn't count, that's jet. It was called...
P-51?
No, it wasn't a P-51. It was a Dornier DO-335, the file.
File?
Or
yeah,
arrow.
File.
And what an amazing machine that was. And it flew. It was combat ready. They didn't have enough pilots. They didn't have enough fuel. It had a puller prop in the front and a pusher prop in the back. And it looked like an arrow.
It was a huge, big fighter plane.
Yeah. Yeah. Have you ever seen a mock-up of it? Or do they have one over there in a museum somewhere?
We're expecting to see one on this tour. We're going to some other places that we have not been to before,
mm-hmm.
including the Messerschmitt Foundation, where we get to see one of everything that Messerschmitt ever built. But there's, I forget where it is, but there is a Dornier over there in Germany, and it's probably on our tour for this time, I think.
There's a picture of one here, Harry, in a museum. It's sitting next to an Arado bomber, the twin jet bomber.
The Arado 234, yeah.
And it's, I'm going to find out where this is. Hold on a second.
It might be at the Smithsonian Aerospace, or it might be at the Deutsches Museum in Munich.
Now here it is. The only surviving DO-335 at the Stephen F. UDVARHAZY Center at Washington, D.C.'s Dulles Airport. They must have a museum at the Dulles Airport.
Wow.
I didn't know this.
I didn't know it was there. Yeah.
No, it's at the Dulles Airport.
I'll be darned.
Yeah.
We'll be seeing some other planes over there, too. There's a P-38, the only flying P-38 in all of Europe.
Yeah.
We'll be seeing that in Austria, and a B-25, and a Corsair, plus some Soviet jet fighters.
Soviet / German jet fighters. Okay, this is the Smithsonian National Air and Space Museum's annex at Washington Dulles International Airport in the Chantilly area of Fairfax County, Virginia. That's where there's a file, the only one.
Wow. That's a big aircraft, too. It sits up on a strange tricycle gear.
Tricycle gear, yeah.
And it just, yeah. Well, it had to have to be. It couldn't be a tail dragger with a prop back there.
No way.
Yeah, that thing was worth about 480 miles an hour, if I remember correctly.
I think you're right. All right, hold on just a second. We'll pause and come back and look at some more pictures in just a few minutes. The Rents.com page and go down to guests and click on photos. And I am told there are some new photos at the bottom of the page. So we'll scroll down to the bottom and it says photos page 2. There's a sign. So let's click on photos page 2. So go to regular photos, load that page and go down to the bottom and click on photos page 2. Okay. Now, are you able to see these, Harry?
I'm working. I reloaded your page 3 times already.
Just pick up the photos. the normal photos link by your name.
That's what I got.
Scroll down to the bottom of the page, and it does say photos page 2, a little tiny blue font. You'll see it.
If you say so. I'll try reloading you one more time here. Reload the rents page. Click, bang, boom. There's those screaming weirdos that want to kill us. Down. Ring of fire.
There's Harry. Find your name.
I see the...
Click on photos. Load them up and then go to the bottom of that page. About 8 photos. Just go down to the bottom. And there is... I've got a link there. You should have a link.
I should. I'm going down. This is about the 5th time I've reloaded.
Just keep loading that photos page. Well, I'll tell you what the pictures are.
Okay.
We'll do it that way. All right, this is where you went out to the, and I believe it's Oktoberfest, and you're at a very colorful, beautiful place where a lot of people sitting and having fun, laughing. Must be 100 people in there seated. And the back of the room, there's a big green part of the wall with a red square in it. And in the red square, it says sharkhunters.com 2016 Southern Patrol. So we're in that room with all those people.
Okay. Okay. I'll try one more time here.
Yeah.
But that is the Oktoberfest, which is the world's largest, the world's biggest beer party, but it's more than that. It's like a state fair, only on a country, national level. I totally shut down Rents and came back into Rents and reloaded again and still no link.
Okay.
I'm so confused.
It's at the bottom of that photo page. You're caught in what they call cache. Your browser is pulling up the same old page that you had stored. It won't give you the new one yet.
Doesn't matter. Hold on. I'm going to my photo page. There it says Prince Radio and 16. Okay, there we go. Now, I've got the page. Okay. First off, we had the, we just left Jeannie, and now we got a picture of the
cop. So where is this big party going on in this big room?
Okay, this is Oktoberfest. We got the blue and white the white and blue cover over the top, and then there's Christy. Can you see Christy?
I'm going
in the order that...
That's picture number 4. There's Christy.
Right, and there's Victor sitting beside her.
Yeah, well, that mug of beer is as big as Christy, practically.
It's a full liter. It's a full liter. That's what they call a Maas, M-A-A-S.
If that was only root beer, I'd drink it.
beer. I do the same when I'm there, but I get Pepsi.
Do you take a big mug of Pepsi and walk around?
Sit at the table and I eat more of that fantastic food.
And the people don't know it's rarely, Pepsi. It's a secret.
Well,
no one asks, right?
Maybe
no
think
one
it's
cares.
Dark beer, who knows?
I have
a beer every so often over there, a small one. A big one like that, geez. You know, when I used to drive race cars, I could put away a fifth of Canadian Club and never feel a buzz, but a half a can of beer. They called me Half Can Harry. I'd be dancing.
You're talking
on the
about
table with a lampshade
after the race.
Oh yeah, or 2 or 3 days before with the parties. Yeah, never during race day. Never. Jesus, 180 miles an hour. You need to be able to think. So let's see. The next picture should be a guy banging on a drum.
Can I go back to the one with the blue and white? I mean, white and blue. No, blue and white.
Yeah, sure.
Now that's
white
just
and blue. That's Bavarian.
Okay, tell us what the significance of that is, and is this just a cover? It looks like the sky is above that.
Tent. Yeah, it's a tent.
Okay.
It's a tent. It's one of the big beer halls.
And so they just pull this over the top. I get it.
Yeah, That's one of the smaller tents. And white and blue are the colors of the Bavarian royal house.
Uh-huh.
Not blue and white,
uh-huh.
but white and blue, they'll tell
it
you.
It looks much different. I understand.
Okay.
Now, here's Christy, the Republican Christy. Organizer,
yep.
having fun.
Yep.
And
oh,
now,
yeah.
truthfully,
she's a fun lady too. She,
how much of that beer did she drink?
I honestly, I don't remember, but my guess is she probably drank it all. I don't know, but...
man, that's a lot of liquid. All right.
Oh, man, you should see these people out there. They're putting away 2, 3, 4 of these things, you know, the Germans. But, of course, some of them, they... we saw one guy fall down flat on the ground in the on the midway, and he couldn't move. The police had to come and pick him up and haul him away because he had overdone it. But what can you, hey, when you're young,
yeah, I know.
I got falling down drunk too when I was young. I don't drink anymore. It's just a waste of time.
Yeah, it is.
So I don't want people to think that we get drunk on our tours. We don't.
No. The food's too good to get drunk. But, now, what's the guy with the drum again?
That was we were in one of the small tents, and that was the band marching in. And
he's walking. I see. There's somebody behind him with a trumpet or something. Yeah.
Right, and they all had American 4th of July type sparklers in their hats going off. I guess that was the fun part.
Uh huh.
Then the next one, you see me and. Jeannie again, getting ready to go. She's got her dirndl on.
Uh-huh. That's a traditional dress that women wore to signal whether they were available or not.
It depended on which side the bow was tied.
Uh-huh.
She told me, you know, one side means you're available, the other side means you're married, but I don't remember which was what.
And I guess if you have a few liters of the beer, it doesn't matter either.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. Then the next one is Hannah Breuer. That's you know, one of the places you go in and eat a lot. I hope
H-A-X-N is Haxen Brater. Brater.
Yeah.
All right.
I have no idea.
It does look like a midway at a carnival, the next picture. Looks exactly like
that. Well, the next one is, the next two of them are midways, yeah, and then I took the one picture of the girls coming toward us so you could see which ones had the bow on which side.
Oh, yeah.
And you'll notice there's different styles, too, because each style represents a specific little area in Germany.
Oh, now that's nice. This is only done during Oktoberfest.
Yeah, pretty much, or other local festivals. And the same thing with the... with the various dress that the men wear. Some wear lederhosen, some wear different types of a suit,
uh-huh.
and the way it's cut, and the buttons and the color indicates what area he's from.
Hmm.
So,
and then they take one look at you, and they know exactly where you're from, right?
Doggone Florida hillbilly come over
that's
here.
That's it.
Then there's another one up the midway. Then you got the one with the yellow tent top.
Mm-hmm.
That's another big beer hall.
Man. So when do they take the tops down?
I don't think they ever take them down. This is permanent.
Uh-huh.
And the Oktoberfest was originally the wedding feast for Prince Ludwig II before he became King Ludwig. And whoever it was that he married. And so every year they had it the first 2 weeks in October, but then the weather systems changed and it got really rainy. So now Oktoberfest is actually in September. It ends the first weekend in October.
Hmm.
So you see down here in the United States where people mm-hmm. are having Oktoberfest in October, you know, they didn't study very well.
Yeah. All right. Photos, page 3. Okay, we'll pull those up. Be able to
describe
see that?
What you got.
Okay. We have another castle.
With trees growing in front of it, right?
Yes, and a white and blue flag. You're not able to see these, huh?
Well, I'm just seeing them on my photo register here. So
okay. Yeah.
So yeah, that's the one. That is the castle of the uncle of Count Klaus Schenk von Stauffenberg.
Uh-oh. There's a name.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's a name we all know. This belonged to his uncle Berthold, and we visit there.
And you're going there this time.
We're going there again. Yes, we are. The next picture is the doorway. The next picture is the courtyard. The next picture is one of the hallways with umpty zillion dead deer heads. And the next picture is the weapons room. It's the largest privately owned weapons collection in Europe. They were lucky that when the Allies came in, nothing was stolen. Now, of course, the name von Stauffenberg is well known to most students of this time period. Excuse me. And Count von Stauffenberg, the guy that put the bomb under the table by Hitler on 20 July 1944, he was shot immediately, as were some of the other conspirators. The rest were not so lucky. They had a piece of piano wire wrapped around their neck and a loop on the other end, and somebody would pick them up and put the loop over a hook on the wall and let them just dangle and dance and strangle. Well, everybody connected with him was grilled by the Gestapo,
mm-hmm.
and his uncle, Berthold, who owned this castle, was tortured and ultimately committed suicide, I think. Von Stauffenberg's wife was put into concentration camp. His children were taken away and put into a foster home, an approved Third Reich foster home.
Mm-hmm.
And in about 1944, I guess they were reunited, but their name was changed. They could never use the name von Stauffenberg again. And then some years after the war, his widow applied for survivor benefits, which, you know, the widows of fallen soldiers get. But they said, we're not giving you anything because
even after the war,
honorably discharged. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
Let me ask you a speculative question. What would have happened had that attempt to silence Der Führer worked? People have speculated about this.
People speculate, and they were proceeding on the idea that if they were to kill Hitler, they could negotiate a peace with the Allies, but they were mistaken.
They were totally wrong. That would have been just utterly wrong.
Totally wrong, because FDR had said during the, what was it, the Yalta conference, that he would accept nothing less than unconditional surrender. So even if Hitler was gone and somebody else took his place, would have been the same. So, who knows? Okay, we visit that castle, and what's the next batch of pictures?
We're outside with Jeff is on the right, labeled, wearing a hood and a bluish jacket. Must be cool. He's pointing at something. That's a low, overgrown white wall of some kind, or a white building.
Okay.
And then there's the next picture is Carl with some round formations behind him, about 7 feet, six feet tall.
Right. Those are the foundation stones of the theater hall. We visit this area. This is, what the hell is his name? Jeff, I can't remember his last name. Not this one, but a different Jeff.
Uh-huh.
Anyhow, he referred to it as the ruins of the Reich. Jeff Walden, the British, G-E-O-F, Jeff Walden, he referred to it as the ruins of the Reich. This is where they had the theater hall, and you're seeing the foundation stones there.
Uh-huh.
And one of the buildings is just a ghostly old wall. That was where ammunition was stored. Excuse me. Then they had another building nearby where the fuses for the ammunition was stored.
Where was this?
This is all.
What kind of Obersalzberg? What kind of a theater? So this theater was on the Obersalzberg.
Yeah, this was a theater for rest and entertainment for the troops.
I see.
And it's nothing but ruins now. All the wood was gone. The villagers took it after the war, either to rebuild their houses or
to keep warm.
Yeah, or to set fire into the fireplace. So that's all gone. But the ruins are still there. And it's only about a quarter of a mile off a main road. We also, there's no pictures of it here, but we also stop and see the foundations of what's called the Kampfhaus, which is where Hitler and Hess stayed after they got out of prison, and Hitler finished writing his book, Mein Kampf.
Now, that's considered the foundations are there, some of them.
The foundations there, the house is gone.
But it was just kind of a cabin in the woods kind of a thing.
Yeah, that's exactly what it was. I'm surprised they haven't bulldozed the foundation because people go there and they look.
Well, some of the stonework, the brickwork, is kind of a red brick and porous and not like a cobblestone or something. The construction was different.
Yeah.
It's just like a homemade forest cottage. It's exactly what it was.
That's pretty much what it was. Tell me what's the next batch you're seeing. And I don't mean to rush you along. It's your show, but we only got 8 minutes, I think.
This is where the coal bins were. I'm looking
right.
at a picture, the last picture of the coal bins. And then above that is a wall. It's a red brick wall with a hole in it. It's just a foundation, some steps going up. Jeff is pictured to the left of it. It's a brick wall where the door used to be. It's blown, looks like it's blown out. You can clearly see the red bricks.
Okay.
And Jeff is in the picture. Now, that's not the forest in the woods. I mean, the cabin in the woods. Because there are no walls left in that.
That's
you know
correct.
What I mean?
There are no walls. Yeah.
Jeff is in the picture on the left. Anyway. And then the next picture after that is the coal where you drive in and they dump the coal on the top and you'd get your coal. Okay.
Well, now, they dump the coal in at the top in these bins and huge bunkers. And then down at these doors you're seeing here, they'd back a truck in there when they needed coal and open up a gate in the roof, in the ceiling, and the coal would come down and fill up. And this was to heat the homes because this whole area up on the top of the mountain, the Obersalzberg, that was all the Reichssicherheitszone, the Reichs, the Third Reich security zone. Hitler's home was there, Bormann's, Goering's, Hess, not Hess, I'm sorry, Speer. All those guys were up there, and nobody got up there unless they had.
Are all the homes destroyed? Or do you, I sent you a very, very beautifully produced piece of, it was a then and now kind of look at the Obersalzberg.
Oh, yes, I remember that, yeah.
Wasn't that nice?
Well, the house of Hitler is gone. Goering's house is gone. They built a multi-zillion dollar hotel on that property, and it was in financial trouble, last I heard.
Mm-hmm.
And Bormann's house was destroyed. Speer's house is still standing. People are living in it. Goering's adjutant's, the adjutantur building is still standing. It's a two-story building where the adjutant lived and where the offices were. There's a lot of buildings still standing, and we visit them.
Yeah, that link I sent you, send it back to me. I'd like to look at that again, actually. That's fascinating.
Okay, I'll see if I can find it.
In amongst a million things. Now, this last group, and this is kind of best for last in a way, it shows the tunnel end of the mountain. At the end of the tunnel is the elevator that goes up to the eagle's nest.
That is correct. And
now, you're going there this trip, okay? This is important.
We are indeed. We always go to the eagle's nest. And the reddish picture with the reddish marble, that was the Italian marble that Mussolini sent as a gift. The next picture with the metal thing that says 1938, that's the inside of the fireplace. the big fireplace.
Mm-hmm.
Then the next, you'll see a room full of people. That's mm-hmm. our group in there eating again.
Are they up at the top?
That's at the top, yes, sir.
Okay, now that...
Way up in the eagle's nest.
That eagle's nest, Hitler, I don't know how far away from his home that was, but the views from that, I guess you've told me, are just phenomenal. And there's a picture out the window of one of them.
That's right. The next picture, you see the stone structure on the right of the picture. Then 1 mile down in the valley, that's the town of Berchtesgaden.
Yeah. Borman built this, right?
Yeah, Borman had it built. That's correct, for Hitler's 50th birthday in 1939.
What an amazing vision that was. And all of you going on this trip will get to go there. And how much... You couldn't even guess how much the German government, such as it is now, makes from tourism to the eagle's nest every year.
We're guesstimating during this tourist season about $10,000 a day, because it costs 20-something bucks to go up there, because you got to ride on a specially geared bus, otherwise you walk.
Right.
And I'm not ready to walk a mile up a mountain. So it costs you 20-something bucks. You get there, and then you're going to eat. That's about another 25 bucks. So now you're 50 bucks, and you're going to buy some souvenirs, maybe a beer. So you figure every person is going to spend about 75 bucks. They can put 40 people into the elevator, and they make the run every 1 minute.
That's a huge elevator. Well, how long does it take to go up? It goes up a lot, doesn't it?
It goes up 400 meters. I think it, I'm guessing.
That's 1,200 feet.
Yeah.
It's 1,200 feet, and it goes up in a minute?
Yeah.
And they built that in the 30s. That's some pretty damn good technology.
Yeah.
And I don't understand how Borman figured that out. He said, well, we're going to build a restaurant, or a special place, wasn't a restaurant then, at the top of this mountain. I'm going to build a vertical elevator, well, what other kind is there, that'll go straight to an entry place, which is this beautiful tunnel. And I don't know, that's just a remarkable accomplishment. Now, the other part of it is, when you think about, had they left Hitler's home and not blown it up, and Goering's, and Hess's, I guess, how much would they be worth today in tourism? Tens of millions of dollars a year.
Oh, yeah. Easy that. I had often thought all they had to do would be to put up a gate and a turnstile. But they're so sensitive over there. Oh, God, people might use it as a Nazi shrine or something.
No, it's called historical architecture.
Goering's home has... Goebbels. Goebbels, up north of Berlin. He had a magnificent home. I've been in it. It's just standing empty. But if you know how to get in them, you get in them. And we had a guide. The big windows still operate. He had two big windows. You push the button, and they drop down into the cellar. So you got a wide open gap.
Really? So you open it up to the outside?
The entrance, correct. Down in the basement, the entrance to his tunnel and bunker system is still there. And the Soviets took it over, and they built some big, grandiose buildings nearby that are falling apart already. And every so often, the German government would decide to open it up for bids to sell it to the highest bidder, and then somebody will come along and say, oh, no, some wealthy Nazi will buy it.
Yeah.
So they take it off the market, and it's been back and forth.
Well, at least it's still standing.
Yeah, and Goebbels' home is in, last I was there, structurally sound as could be. But the Soviet buildings, they've gone to hell in a handbasket.
Yeah, not surprised.
They just put them up for a short time.
Yeah, yeah. I wanted to talk about and look at some pictures also of this resort that was built for the German worker, that is now being turned into luxury apartments or condominiums on the that big long block of a building.
On the island of Rügen.
Yeah.
But that happened several years ago, apparently, whoever got that news.
I've run the story before.
Catching it.
It was an encore
right,
run.
And that was part of the Third Reich, KDF, Kraftdurchfreude, which is strength through joy, to where they made vacation hotels available and, mm-hmm. and cruise ships
right.
available to the common worker. So,
right.
and like I told you, the Wilhelm Gustloff had been a KDF
right.
ship before
yeah.
the war.
Yeah. All right, well, that's another story. That's another story.
Yep.
We got to go.
We've run us up to the mark.
Yeah. What we've done is given you a quick preview of some of the things you'll get to see if you go on the Southern Patrol this fall with Harry. And I hope you'll all look into it more. Contact Shark Hunters for more information. And it's going to be a great trip. Another great trip.
It always is.
Okay.
Yeah, we always have a great time. We got good people over there. Boots on the ground. One of our friends in Nuremberg is the assistant to the mayor. He's a lieutenant colonel in the army. He opens all the doors for us. And every place we go, we have local people that just make everything happen beautifully.
All right. Okay, my friend, thank you. And I wish I were going, but we'll get to go vicariously, at least, with pictures. Congratulations on the Brazil visa. 10 years worth.
Thank
Good
you.
Job. Wow, you had to earn that one. All right.
Yeah, and it was good to hear Jim Mars again. Hope it'll
yeah.
keep him in our prayers that he bounces back.
Indeed. Thank you, Harry. Thanks. Be well. Take
All
care.
Right.
Okay.
Thank you. Good night.
Good night. Harry Cooper, sharkhunters.com, and we'll pause and come right back with another hour for you.